On a search for adventure and excitement, six youths went on a journey through the universe to save the internet and guarantee the happiness of its people. Tony Bishop, Eric Trevarthen, Soren Mundrop, Raymond Caritas, Russell Cat, and Michael Feiwiger. Kazoku Sente, recurring donors! This one goes out to them.
Major Spoilers theme song!
The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. On the air. The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air. On the air. Podcast.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven. If you're listening to the Major Spoilers podcast,
The Major Spoilers podcast is on the air.
Welcome to issue 492 of the Major Spoilers podcast. Yep.
8 issues from issue 500.
I know. I don't even, people are like, what are you guys going to do for 500? Like, probably record a show.
Right now.
Oh, we need a live show.
Yeah. It's like, one thing you can always count on is that at the big number issues, we will certainly forget.
No, we should totally do. We should jump from 499 to 501.
There you go.
And see who knows.
And freak people out. So what are we at? We're
and then
at
later we can throw info.
Let me look here. We're at 492 now. Let's see. Mm-hmm. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Ooh, by the end of January, we will hit the second show of the week, the Friday show, whatever it is. No, actually, it looks like maybe our dueling review show is issue 500, Matthew.
Issue 500. Oh, whoa. Crap. You know what that means?
What's that?
Immediately after that, we're going to have to spin it off into its own
show. I know. That's what I've been waiting for.
Just like they did with Ménage à Trois. Now Amber has her own strip with Dylan, and it's not the same.
I don't know what you're talking about, fool.
I'm talking about webcomics, one of which you introduced me with. Shoot.
Oh, hey, look, Zach's here.
Hi, everyone.
And Rodrigo is here.
Hi. You know what that means?
Yep. No. What does that mean?
It's time for
Zach on Film. Zach on Film. I've asked people on Twitter, create a theme song for Zach on Film. And actually, one person said, only thing I can think of is Girls on Film. I'm like, yes, exactly.
I actually looked up that song.
And the reason for that, I think you should do it.
I was like, everyone's keep saying
we should have.
You guys keep referencing the song. I was like, I'm going to look it up. I got about 30 seconds in. No, this sucks.
It's about Girls on
you
Film, dude. It's about
Duran Duran. Yeah,
it's about
not,
pornography.
You know what? It's really not Duran Duran's best.
Do not badmouth Duran Duran.
I wasn't badmouthing the band, that one song.
I don't even know what the line of that song is, because there's a line that sounds like it bites the big one. And when I was 12 years old and that song came out, that's the closest thing to cursing I'd ever heard on the radio. And that is why I love Girls on Film.
All right, there you go.
All
so
right,
this week,
go.
So this week, Zach, we have tasked him mm-hmm. with taking a look at the movie Pi.
Yes,
and a couple of cool things about Pi uh-huh. that people may not know about is that first of all, it's a black and white movie.
Yeah.
It is an independent film that was done on an incredibly low budget. I don't know if the version that you saw had the director's commentary, but he's talking about how his mom was making huge pots of spaghetti for everybody.
I think the budget on IMDb said $60,000.
Yeah, it wasn't very high.
Low.
So that's the second thing. Darren Aronofsky, which a lot of people know his name nowadays. Yeah. What do they know him now from, Rodrigo?
Swan.
Oh, Black Swan, that's right. What else did he do? Oh, and The Wrestler? Oh, that's right. Did he win an Oscar for The Wrestler?
Fountain.
And The Fountain, which...
Yeah.
The Fountain.
What's
interesting.
What's that other movie like The Wrestler that he did?
He did Memento, didn't he?
No,
that's Nolan.
There was one.
He did, Requiem for a Dream, mm-hmm. Below, The Fountain, The Wrestler, Black Swan, The Fighter, which is probably what Matthew's thinking of. He's only the executive producer on that one. And then his upcoming project is Noah. Which is really an interesting take.
Yeah, interested about that.
Yeah.
Very much.
There was one that was almost, that was very similar to the wrestler that he did that I liked, and I can't remember what it is now. I don't know.
Well, from what I've heard of the wrestler, Black Swan is, has the same ending. So maybe that's what you're thinking of.
He did do the wrestler.
Huh?
He did do the wrestler.
Yeah, I liked the wrestler.
Right.
I really liked
it. You're saying aside from that one,
right, there was one that I thought was like it. I may be thinking of the fighter. I don't know, but I don't know. Go on, move on.
Anyway.
Anyway.
And
Aronofsky.
So the other thing, at least for me, I came across Pi because it was one of the very first DVDs that I bought because there weren't very many titles when the DVDs were first released.
So it was a, that DVD you gave me was old.
It was
the
old.
The case was, you could just tell it was old.
Yeah, because it had dust on it and boogers.
Oh, yeah. No. I haven't.
Yeah, it was one of those old jewel cases.
Oh, yeah, so that one does have... I didn't know if you watched... I don't remember if I gave that to you,
you
or if...
I didn't watch it with the commentary yet.
Yeah, you might want to go back and listen to it, because it's rather fascinating.
Which is
especially
nice
when he talks about some of the reasons... And really, I think... Maybe you don't agree, Rodrigo, but I think that there are times that it's good to have the director's commentary on stuff,
mm-hmm.
because you can find out so much about the production process,
yes.
what he was thinking during these scenes, and those kinds of things. I've got friends, my good friend Charlie White hates director's commentary.
Really?
He's like, I just want to watch a movie. I don't want to hear people yapping about stuff. I want to focus on this. But I think from, especially from a learning perspective for you, Zach, when you're wanting to find out about the very unique editing rhythm that he creates in this movie, the commentary I think is rather important.
Yeah, I think commentary is cool because it's almost like a podcast in that you actually get to watch a film while talking about it, and they're talking about what's happening. It's not like someone's asking questions continuously, they're going back and forth, but it's like, this is the movie
once
and I'm going to talk about while it's going.
Movie.
Yeah, you can't watch the first view.
Oh no, not the first viewing. Rodrigo, do you like the commentary tracks?
Yeah, I like them. The thing is I've seen a few movies and definitely like TV episodes. Like I'll go back and watch a TV episode with the director's commentary on.
Mm-hmm.
But I sometimes do not have the patience to watch a whole movie with the director's commentary on, especially if the director isn't very eloquent.
Yeah.
Like I've definitely watched movies where it's like, okay, see, this scene, what we did was we took a crane
mm-hmm.
and we went over here and it was like really high, right? Like, what was it? Like 17 meters? Did we do a whole 17 meters? Yeah, so it was like 17 meters, right? So we were like 17 meters above this pool.
I have...
And then, so we start rolling that, right? So it's like,
yeah.
Sometimes it can be really dull. And it's interesting from, it can be interesting from a formal standpoint, and it can be interesting from, oh, what were you thinking while you were doing this?
Right.
But sometimes you just get into these like spells within the director's commentary and they don't go back and redo it.
No, it's sit down and talk.
A long, boring rant in the middle of a director's commentary. That's it.
I forget what movie it is, but it's Arnold Schwarzenegger is doing the commentary.
That's what I was just going to talk about.
And it is awful.
It's funny.
It's so bad. So in addition to some of the things we've mentioned, there's also some very cool techniques that he uses that are now we see a lot more often. So Zach, give us a rundown of the movie Pi, P-I, or the symbol Pi, the 3.141795, whatever it is.
141.5 9.
That this movie is about.
Okay, so Pi is about a young guy who's really smart, and he's infatuated with numbers, and he believes that there is a system to the world, that numbers derive meaning, and that everything in the world is made up of numbers, so through the numbers you can find meaning through the world. And he is using that to try to master the stock market, essentially.
Well, I don't know if he's trying to master the stock market. He's just trying to find order in the chaos.
Is he trying to... Because he always comes back to the stock market about what's happening and trying to figure out what that is. So.
Well, that's what he's using as his proof.
His proof.
Right,
oh, okay.
Right.
Well, it's not like he's trying to overtake the stock market. It's just it ends up being his little thing he goes after.
Mm-hmm.
And so he starts making discoveries and ends up being this kind of big, he kind of becomes really important between people that are trying to save the stock market, mm-hmm. and then a group of Hebrew priests mm-hmm. who are trying to unlock secrets out of the Bible,
mm-hmm.
and he just keeps studying, and he has a, I believe it's one of his old professors, who mm-hmm. He goes to his apartment every once in a while, and he talks to, because he was also, he studied pi, and it kind of ruined his life, but he believes it ruined his life, but the main character says, no, it was just, like, almost random happenstance, like, because he had a stroke after he was doing all this study with pi, and he stopped, and he got mad at him, because he thought that was ridiculous.
Yes, but then, you know, as you're talking about his, Max's teacher, what's his name? Gosh, I forget what his name is. But as he says, hey, I suffered this breakdown mm-hmm. because of I'm studying into this and you need to back away from it. We also see that Max is also having.
Oh, yeah. No, Max is having breakdowns almost pretty much like right from the beginning. You can tell there's yeah. something. He takes pills constantly.
He's got super bad migraines.
Yeah, really bad migraines. He gets a situation, he starts taking pills, and he passes out sometimes. He'll wake up in weird places, and his nose is bleeding. And it all seems to be derived from his infatuation with these numbers.
I think you kind of touched on it earlier, you know, he's trying to find order out of chaos.
Yeah.
And the more he tries to find this, and when he realizes that he understands it, that's when paranoia kicks in. And that's when he's starting to see the shadow government figures, the cabal, mm-hmm. just the man on the street, everybody is kind of after yeah. him. And his world kind of falls apart.
Yeah, and there's a part of me that was for a while that I was like, well, are these all people just in his mind? Because I thought, well, is this kind of... I think this came out before the movie A Beautiful Mind.
Right.
Which was what I kind of thought of because, you know, he has a number thing and he's a schizophrenic and imagines all these people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I thought. But I don't think that's true. I don't think they were all imaginary. I don't think it.
No,
Rodrigo?
I don't think so either.
Not even I forget the government woman that keeps appearing just out of nowhere. She'll step out and say, Max, you got to come with us, Max.
Well, if you think she would have to be imaginary, then you have to assume that the priest would have to be, because they interact at, I believe, in one scene that she's trying to take him, but then they take him off really quick, and then they see they go to their big boss guy.
No, mm-hmm. I wouldn't. I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, Pi is one of those movies that just kind of,
yeah,
like it doesn't wrap up at the end. It doesn't go, oh, this is what was happening all along, you guys.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, like, yeah. He gets to the point where
all that stuff is open to interpretation.
Right. Yeah.
My interpretation is, yeah, all of these people were real.
Yeah,
and all
no,
of
I
this
agree.
Stuff was happening.
And he ends up drilling it out of his head.
He bottomizes himself.
Yeah, pretty much.
And that kind of caught me off guard because I was watching this late at night and I was kind of tired. And we're getting towards the end, and then you just see him take out a drill and just shove it into his head.
Yep.
Oh yeah, that's a great scene.
Yeah.
By the way, Zach.
Yeah.
You're a fine young man, and I would like for just a moment. Uh-huh. I want to go off the side because I'm a jerk like this.
That's cool.
I want to do what is called a mitzvah. When you're referring to the Jewish priests, they are rabbis. Rabbi is the word you're looking for. I'm here to help, brother.
Thank you.
Go on. Drill to the head.
No, that's it. I mean, basically, after they find him, he has forgotten everything. And so he leads life as someone who is, I don't want to say, maybe he leads a simpler life because he's gone through the gate of all knowing and has come out the other side and is just now, I'd rather.
I think that last scene was really nice because towards the beginning of the movie, this girl in Max's apartment comes up and just starts asking him random math questions, and she'll just start punching him in a calculator and he'll just answer him. Just huge multiplication, division, he'll just mm-hmm. rattle him off. At the end, after he drills himself in the head, she comes up and they're at the park and she asks another question and he's like, I don't know. What is it? And then she tells him the answer. And that's pretty much the end.
You know, this movie touches on a lot of themes. I really like this movie mm-hmm. a lot. But it touches on some things that, you know, there's the conspiracy part that really goes into, you know, La La Land, if you want to go down that way.
Yeah.
But part of the thing that he touches on in the mathematics is the... the Fibonacci sequence,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And how the Fibonacci sequence is this pattern that you can see in all things. And, you know, here I am. I'd gone through college. I don't know, if Rodrigo, if you had talked about Fibonacci in any of your art or film classes.
No. All I found out about, you know, the Fibonacci sequence and fractals and all that stuff, I found out kind of on my own.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, and that was one of the things. I saw this and was like, ah, Fibonacci sequence, fractals, oh, this spiral pattern. And then I started doing some studying on this. This is way before Wikipedia was even a thing, right? And so you start learning about the golden spiral, mm-hmm. and then you're like, oh, the golden spiral has been something that has been around for forever, and that artists mm-hmm. understand the spiral. And if you look at great works of art, you can see the spiral, the golden spiral in that. In fact, somebody had taken a picture, taken the satellite picture of Hurricane Sandy, and they were actually able to impose the golden spiral on top of it, and it fit perfectly with the really? Golden spiral in the way those arcs were. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can use that golden spiral, Zach, when you're looking at composing imagery,
yeah.
when you are looking at framing a shot, how you're leading the viewer through your scene. Mm-hmm. So just from, if you got anything out of it, if you just wanted to follow the yeah. golden spiral route, we've talked about this in the aesthetics about. Portion of video production.
Yeah, I think we talked about the perfect square.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Golden, the golden ratio.
Yeah, golden ratio.
Yeah, the golden ratio fits in with this too. And you can really use that to really make a huge impact mm-hmm. in the visual storytelling that you're doing. Now, granted, that's a lot of, you're putting a lot of nerd into your shot.
Yeah.
If you're really going that far, but it kind of, you know, plays out.
Yeah.
No, really.
Well,
if you're sitting, I mean, you know, you can really be crawling up your own butt to the extent where you're sitting there going, oh, well, I must move this over 7.82 microns so that mm-hmm. this face aligns perfectly right, with right. the golden right. spiral, because then people will understand how beautiful my compositions yeah. are. I mean, you really could go that far, but yeah. you know, part of the golden ratio is just looking at the rule of thirds mm-hmm. kind of falls into that. What were you going to say, Rodrigo?
Just like walk in and yell at your cinematographer and be like, what are you doing? Are you following Avogadro's number? I said Fibonacci.
So what did you get out of this? I mean, we've already talked about the mathematics and the theme. What did you get out of this?
What I really liked about one of the first things I noticed was the score and the soundtrack and the music they used in it mm-hmm. was awesome, because they just create this like, you feel psychotic watching this almost because of the noises and the sounds and just the rhythms that they use through sound. But then they also, the rhythms they use through the editing
mm-hmm.
was awesome. When he is running through, I can't remember what he was going somewhere, but he was running through the streets mm-hmm. and they go cut back and forth between like a first person shot
right.
and then right go back on him mm-hmm. and the first person shot's all
yeah, so that, I mean,
stuff as he's running through it.
We talk about, so a couple of, let's talk about that shot first and we'll go back to the
editing. Yeah.
So that particular shot is something that is, I guess, became more mainstream after he did it. I think mm-hmm. Rolling Stones had used it in a music video first. And then he did it in Pi, and yeah. it became very popular because, again, it was out on DVD and everybody could have access right. to it. And then we started seeing it in a lot of commercials in the late 90s. Mm-hmm. But basically, it is a camera mounted to the actor or actress right. with the camera pointing right at their face. And so as they move, their head stays locked in position, but the world around mm-hmm. them is spinning. It's a really cool, really neat sequence. And people today, you can go online and YouTube, whatever, people are showing you how you can build those kind of rigs yourself using a GoPro camera
yeah.
and whatnot. But why do you use that shot? Why, I mean, that's a gimmicky, yeah. shot, but there's a reason for using that. Why use it in this case?
Why use that? I know.
This
always,
is a test.
Always testing me. Through that, it really is. Established him in the craziness almost.
Yeah.
It kept him focused, but let the world go.
Because
all wonky.
Literally, when he gets into that fit and he's running through yeah. the streets having his breakdown, the world around him is crazy and spinning. Yeah. And that's the reason why you use it. And you don't use it for just anything. You see people, what's his name? Devin Supertramp on YouTube will use an effect like that, mm-hmm. where he'll take a GoPro camera and mount it on the end of a golf club, and then they'll jump off the top of a cliff into the, what's the Lake Mead out in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
And so you see it from that person's, you know, view as they're going down and everything spins around them. And it's kind of cool for an effect. He did it in their big jump rope, bungee jump sequence too. Mm-hmm. But it's not something I think you can use all the time. And unfortunately, Rodrigo, this happens a lot, right? I mean, people see shaky cam, or they see this point of view shot, or they, I don't know, see some kind of an editing sequence, and everybody has to use it.
Yeah, people see a cool effect, and then they feel compelled to have that cool effect in their movie. You know, you
lens flares.
You know, with every, especially in action movies, we see major, yes, lens flares, one of them. We see that bullet with time. The fast, slow, fast, mm-hmm. bullet time, which, you know, the fast, slow, fast thing kind of is a little bit like bullet time, but although it is kind of its own effect as well.
Mm-hmm.
We do see it with this, with that mounted camera. We've seen it in other things. Definitely, for a while, it looked like a lot of reality shows that were like contest based were mm-hmm. doing that. We're mounting mm-hmm. a camera on like people's helmets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, while they were like,
oh, just go
to swim like a salmon up a river or something stupid yeah. like that.
Go to the GoPro site there. They've got some great videos, but mm-hmm. it's all that point of view kind of stuff, either from the athlete's point of view or pointing back at them. It's cool, right. but it's an effect. It's a gimmick shot.
Yeah, and it's jarring. And the reason why it works in Pi is because it's supposed to be jarring.
Yeah, exactly.
If you just use it randomly in a movie, people are going to say, why is this so significant? Because it drastically messes up the rules of what you're doing. You know, the rest of the movie is shot on a tripod.
Mm-hmm.
Why all of a sudden are we, you know, tied to this person's face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. And it has a message, and you have to use those things for effect. Mm-hmm. The other thing that really has always stood out for me in this movie is how you can create a rhythm, as you said, almost a musical rhythm mm-hmm. just through editing. So when Max is having or leading up to his supergiant migraines, he pops pills.
Yes.
And there's a great rhythm where let me see if I remember this. It's open the medicine cabinet, pills in the hand, mm-hmm. turn on the sink, and then swallow. And it's just like this boom, ch, boom, ch. And it's really a great beat rhythm. And he uses this multiple times throughout the movie each time he's doing that,
mm-hmm.
which I think makes the ending maybe even more shocking, because you're like, okay, here comes the migraine. We're going to see this rhythm pattern again. And instead it's right through the through the head. So tell me about this editing pattern and what strikes you about it, and whether it works or doesn't work, or how you might be able to apply that. There's a couple of really cool things about how that's edited beyond just the rhythm.
Just that pill sequence?
Yeah.
Or just the whole thing?
Yeah, just that pill sequence.
Well, it's something that I've seen now, which is fun about doing this, is that I get to watch movies from a time period when I was younger, and that established trends, because
mm-hmm.
the first place, and when I first saw that, I was like, oh, that, I remember that from Shaun of the Dead.
Right.
They do that a lot mm-hmm. in those movies, and I was like, oh, okay, that's where this comes. So is this like the first time that kind
of
cadence?
No, I mean, no, not necessarily that cadence, but I mean, this is the one, I think this is one of the few times that it really stands out. I mean, go back and watch Army of Darkness, mm-hmm. and you'll see when Ash is getting ready to build his, you know, his giant robot arm, and they're mechanically decking out his car to fight the undead.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They have that same kind of thing that's there.
That's one. Sam Raimi does that a lot. He mm-hmm. does that getting ready shot, except it's like a combination of that shot from Pi, or that sequence from Pi, and the gearing up scene from Rambo.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
you just kind of like smash those two together, and that's when that's Spider-Man putting on his costume, or Ash yep. like fixing his chainsaw or whatever.
Yeah, and the fact that you don't have to use music or beats or bomb, you know, you don't have to do that. It's natural sounds, the pill in the hand, the water going mm-hmm. on, bom. Spider-Man pulling on his glove, zipping up the whatever and pulling yeah. on the mask. It's like, whoosh, boom, and it's all, you know, the natural sound effect exactly. that you would hear. And so that's fascinating absolutely. As well. Yes, I mean, Foley is all in there, but it is
they're definitely emphasized.
Believable.
It's, you know, it's the equivalent of audible sharpness of a sword when it goes
shing. Right, right, mm-hmm. right, right.
You know, it is an exaggeration, but it's less of an exaggeration than
in the case of Pi, that I would believe is more Nat sound than some kind of Foley that they're doing. But it's pure editing that creates that rhythm. The other thing is, here is, it's four shots, and it's got to last less than 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. And in those 3 or 4 seconds, you have the entire sequence of, here is somebody taking his pill, right? You don't have to show 30 seconds of him going to the cabinet, opening it up, taking the bottle down, opening the cap, putting the pills in his hand, putting the water in the cup, taking the pills, swallowing the water, going back and sitting down and waiting for the door to start bulging, mm-hmm. or whatever the visions that he has as the migraine is oncoming. Let's take that and knock it down into 4 seconds. And that, I think, is probably the most brilliant part of that sequence beyond the rhythm that's being created, is that you can take time and compress it down that small and still make it an effective edit. Now, he used that same effect. Go ahead, Rodrigo.
I think one of the important aspects of that is that repetition, because mm-hmm. it lets you know that you've kind of, it's like the end of a chapter.
Yeah, I was going to say it's almost like a chapter
every
marker.
Time. Yeah, exactly. And that's, and I think that's pretty much what it is. And that's, it does two things. It lets you know that we're moving on to another part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it lets you know that the tone of the movie is also changing, because every time we see that, every time we move it on, like, it goes up in intensity until the final moment where, rather than pills, we see a drill.
Right. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're right, Rodrigo. And that is even more effective because he uses the same technique again in Requiem for a Dream, which is about drug use and abuse, mm-hmm. and how even simple drugs like weight loss pills can have this impact. And he does the same thing where it's, I think the heroin shoot up, it's the, what is it? Boiling the heroin, injecting it into the vein, and then the pupil dilation is the sequence.
Pupil dilation.
And then you hear this verbal intake of, you know, the rush is coming. Right. And in Requiem for a Dream, unlike Pi, where things in Pi kind of spiral out of control, here they really spiral out of control, and you're actually going almost down to different levels of hell each time that these mm-hmm. chapters close, to where you get to the end and you're like, oh, this has got what's her face in it, I can't wait to see this. And then you get to the movie and you're like, no. Mm-hmm. So if you like Darren Aronofsky, if you like Pi, you might want to go check out Requiem for a Dream, but it's way different than Pi.
Oh, I watched Black Swan when it came out on the DVD, and
I haven't really seen that one yet, but I'm going to bet that it's still not as shocking as to what happens
I'll tell you what, even with how, you know, suddenly frightening Pi can be at times.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen it 2 or 3 times. I have only seen Requiem for a Dream once, and I only plan to have seen it once, because it was an experience and it was a movie that I really, really enjoyed and was really great, but I don't want to see it again. It's that intense.
Yeah. And I'm the same way, to where I've watched it and I'm like, you know what? It's sitting there on the DVD shelf. Every time someone mentions it, I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah, I want to watch that again. And then every time I get ready to do it, I'm like, no, I do not want to watch this again.
No, I do not. Yes.
Yeah. And it's not that it's a bad movie. It's a really good movie. But he uses some of those techniques. And when we talk about directors using techniques like slow, fast, slow with Zack Snyder, Alfred Hitchcock's shots that he's always using in his pieces, we start to see directors start to ingest their signature into their works. Up until, I think, probably Hook. Steven Spielberg, in all of his movies, you always see a shot at night with a falling shooting star mm-hmm. streaking across the scene. And that was kind of his little signature shot that he would kind of put in, for effect. I guess the warning I would say, as you're using this knowledge that you've gained from watching Pi going forward, is don't use a gimmick just to be a gimmick.
Right.
Realize that editing is really your friend and you can really tell a good story that's short. And the other one is watch the lighting in this, because they use really super contrast lighting and you still are able to tell a great picture.
Yeah, no, in this piece. That was one of the first, and I popped it. I knew it was black and white because I saw it back the cover, and I threw it in. I was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And at first, I was like, oh, these are really blown out. And I was like, well, that's weird. Why would they do that? But then you get watching, like, oh, well, they're doing it for.
Yeah. Effect. I mean, you can tell a really good, good story with harsh lighting.
Yeah.
I don't always recommend it, but
no.
You have to find the lighting mood that fits your scene. Rodrigo, anything else that you would share with young Zach on the movie Pi?
I, as somebody who suffers from migraines, I certainly can relate to the feeling of wanting to shove a drill into your head. And I know that sounds crazy, but it's actually kind of true. The way that I often think about it is that I want to scoop out parts of my head with a melon baller.
Yay.
That's what a migraine feels like. So from that,
you sure are imitable behaviors.
From that standpoint, I would say that's like the most realistic and accurate part of Pi is the way that those migraines make him feel.
Yeah. Matthew, you've seen Pi?
No,
you haven't? Pie. Matthew, your assignment is to go watch Pi. I believe it's on Netflix. It might still be on Netflix.
I've never seen Pi, but I'm familiar with the Shem HaMefarash. Does that count?
Well, they do go into a lot of the Kabbalah.
That's actually what they're talking about here.
Yeah, they go into a lot of the Kabbalah yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think you'll really enjoy it, Matthew. You should give it a watch.
Yeah, you really should.
It's really Netflix?
It's pretty.
I think it's on Netflix, and it's only like 85 minutes or something like that. You can watch it in a night, and then I think the night I watched it, I stopped it and at the end went around and watched it again,
really?
Just because I wanted to see it. It's kind of like Donnie Darko. And remind me before you go, give you the good copy of Donnie Darko, not the director's cut.
Did I give you the good one?
I gave you the director's cut.
Oh,
yeah, director's cut.
Director's cut is just, which is odd because I watched.
Well, the director's makes a few things explicit that shouldn't necessarily be explicit.
Yes, and I think that's I agree with you because in the director's cut I watched that and it's like the first time you watch the theatrical release of Donnie Darko, you're like, oh, what does that mean? And so you're allowed to interpret things in your own way or maybe go out and research and do some thinking about this topic. But then when you watch the director's cut, he's pretty cut and dried as to what he's doing. And I'm like, I didn't like that.
He turns it into a superhero story.
Yeah. And I didn't like that. Yeah, I didn't like that. So before you go, make sure that I give you the right Donnie Darko.
Gotcha.
Or if you want to watch it on the other thing, you know, the iTunes or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you watch a lot of stuff on iTunes?
No.
You don't? How come? Or did Netflix? You watch movies on the Netflix?
I watch Netflix.
Why don't you? You're fired.
My roommate actually have their Xbox set up, but he's gone for the break, so his isn't. But when he comes back, then I watch Netflix. But I don't do iTunes because my laptop is really slow.
Oh.
And so I don't have an Apple TV.
What?
Yeah.
Come on.
I know.
You need to ask for that for Christmas.
That's so long. It's so far away.
Ask for it for your birthday. Ask for it for Arbor Day.
Valentine's Day.
All right. Ask
Kansas
for it for
Day.
Kansas
Day.
$99. $99. Apple TV.
Look at that.
Beer on the wall.
And they got it in 1080p.
Yep.
Works great.
Boom.
All right.
Do they have it in 8-bit?
No. So some of us... No, it doesn't look like it's on Netflix. It may be on the Hulu. Some of us actually had a chance to watch Doctor Who, The Snowmen. Now, first of all, Zach, you did not watch it.
No.
Do you watch Doctor Who?
I try to, and by try to, I mean, I enjoy Doctor Who, but I'm always just doing other stuff, and I have other stuff I need to watch that it gets put on the burner.
Zach on film.
Yeah, Zach on film. I'm generally watching a movie. I have to watch a movie like every week. And then there's other movies that I want
to
watch.
That I'll finally get a chance to do it. All movies now.
Yeah.
To watch all of them.
Like we were back when the season started, I was like, they were like, oh, we're going to review the first episode. I was like, okay, I'll just buy a season pass. I want to watch it. I've only watched the first episode.
Oh,
everything's just sitting.
All right. Doctor Who, the Snowman, the Christmas episode.
All right. This is one of the best second Doctor stories of the modern era.
Wow, what a great... I got a chance to watch it tonight before we sat down to record. And even though there was all the noise of the kids, as the kids often do, as we're trying to get them the baths and get them to go to bed, and one of them crying because he wants this, and the other one's got the eye thing, and the phonemastat, and all that. this was a great story. I will say, minute for minute, this Doctor Who has the best lines delivered per minute than any other episode.
It's
I am the smart one, you are the potato one.
Yes. Sir! Emergency! I've been run over by a carriage!
Yes. Oh, I see the thought worm. I see the thought worm. Do you see it? What am I looking for?
Oh. See what? Yes. The fact that they brought Strax back to life is now, one of the only ways that they could have gotten me over the loss of Rory and Amy and made me really, really happy immediately walking into this episode.
So how did they bring him back? How did they bring him back?
They didn't say. The doctor said
they hand wave it.
He died once. A friend of mine brought him back. It will be addressed. I mean, come on.
Well, that's the other thing that's kind of nice, too, is
it's Moffat.
Is that this episode references so many things that have come on in the past. You know, if you go back to the time where they're going to save the ponds and he's mustering his army and he's going out and finding all these people. I don't remember the lizard woman before the Victorian era. What's her name?
That was her first appearance.
That was her first appearance. And people are like, who is this? We don't know who this is. And then suddenly you get to this Christmas episode and it's like, oh, he spent a long time in this time period. And she's a great character. And her wife is great too. Wow. That's all I can say about this episode. It's really, really well done.
Two things.
Sure.
That I need to say while you're going awesome, awesome.
Sure,
awesome.
Sure.
Awesome, awesome, awesome. For three things. Are you ready?
Sure.
Three things. Okay. First, the first half of this story, Matt Smith is almost certainly playing Patrick Troughton, the second doctor.
Because
he's changed his costume to look like the second doctor.
Yes.
He's wearing the hat.
Mm-hmm.
He's acting all broody like the second doctor. It's awesome.
So the second doctor encountered the great intelligence in a series called The Abominable Snowman set in the 1930s. And so we've got a tie-in. So they're really going back and trying to put this all together, not only the look, and at one point when Clara is laying there dying and he comes out wearing the smoking jacket, I'm like, oh, there's that doctor that he's channeling.
Yep. And throughout this episode, there are little touches that I just found to be utterly charming, not just in the story, but in a meta way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the voice of the great intelligence is Sir Ian Magneto. Gandalf is the voice of the great intelligence. But more importantly, and this is something that Doctor Who nerds will go, oh, Doctor Who nerd, Richard Grant, who plays the evil guy, was actually chosen to be the ninth doctor before there was a ninth doctor. BBC actually commissioned a series of Flash animated web shows to at the time be the official continuation of Doctor Who in, like, I don't want to say 2005.
I think I remember
those. Richard Grant actually did two webcasts as what was at the time the ninth doctor. These days, I believe he's referred to mostly as the Shalka doctor. He's an alternate version of the doctor who does or does not exist. But it was fascinating to me to see that character, that actor playing a character in context. And then also go back to the fact that he played one of the doctors in that parody, Curse of Fatal Death.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember this? Where Mr. Bean was the first doctor, and then he died and regenerated into Richard Grant, and then he died and regenerated into Hugh Grant.
No, I don't remember.
And then he regenerated into Joanna Lumley.
No, I don't remember.
At the end, he's the master and the doctor get married because the master is, what's his face? The Britishian, you know, the British guy. But the doctor is played by Joanna Lumley. It's beautiful.
Okay. All right.
But every scene had something that you could look at if you're like me going, oh, meta statement. Oh, I'm going to deconstruct this in my fan fiction.
I just like the fact that this is
a really good story.
Yeah, I just like that this is a prequel to an extent of so many other things that have already come before. You know, the web of
like Mary Poppins.
Yeah, the Mary Poppins reference. Yes, But, you know, the Great Intelligence, the Web of Fear, the Abominable Snowmen stories. I mean, just the fact that they're saying, hey, here's a story that took place 100 years before the Abominable Snowmen story. And here's how they kind of tie together. And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. And the Great Intelligence loses to the 11th Doctor 200 years before he loses to the second Doctor 900 years earlier.
Wrap that around your noodle, Rodrigo.
Yeah. Time travel.
Although, was it supposed to be the Great Intelligence?
That's what
the
card said.
The Great Intelligence was just a link. Yeah. But, all right.
I mean, that's what they're calling. I mean, that's what they're calling Ian McKellen's character.
Great Intelligence. Yeah. But the Great Intelligence, that we got a card at the end that said the Great Intelligence. That means that, like, that's our bad wolf of the season.
That was my one concern is because they kept flashing that card around with the Great Intelligence on it. I was like, oh, this is the bad wolf that will run throughout this entire season. Is that a problem, Matthew? If that's exactly what they're doing?
No, because I think that there's another bad wolf in the companion and yet another bad wolf, you know, floating around in the Doctor's changes to the TARDIS and his difference in his bearing and his demeanor. So there's a lot of stuff in there that could bear some plot twisting at the end and become important later.
Oh, and if previous seasons are any indication, like if Moffat's run is any indication, all of that stuff's going to get explored and all of that stuff's going to get moved around and shown in the process.
Yeah.
What did you guys like?
Jenna Louise Combe.
I was going to say, we were just getting to her part. What do you guys think of this character who keeps dying and coming back? Are we going to see her die in every episode?
God, I hope so.
I do too. Wouldn't it be awesome if she just kept dying and we didn't find out until the end of the series what it's all about?
Yeah, and I'm guessing that's what it's going to be. I mean, technically we're halfway through this series.
Right.
It's true.
So
there's like seven?
That's got to be the second half of it is going to be figured out what her deal is while simultaneously working out the Great Intelligence.
And she is one of the only actors on the show who talks as fast and wraps her face around the technobabble, or in this case, the, you know, pseudo intellectual Victorian babble, as quickly as Matt Smith, which I thought really awesome during their interplay.
So a couple of things. She had said something to the Doctor both times that made him trigger that, oh, this is the Dalek Oswin that I...
Soufflé girl.
Yes, the Soufflé girl. What was it that she said? There's my cheeky doctor or something. What did she say?
Clever boy.
Clever boy. Out,
clever boy. Okay. Yeah.
Could she be a Time Lord?
She could.
I hope not.
I do too. There are half a dozen things she could be. I mean, I've seen people theorizing that she's Romana, theorizing that she is Jenny, the Doctor's daughter from season 3.
Well, and that's what I was wondering too.
Theorizing that she's the Ronnie.
That would make the weird kissing part.
Actions that were taken during this episode would make it really weird if she was Jenny.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I would be bothered by that because that is kind of, and this is going to sound bad, that's kind of a garden variety twist.
Mm-hmm.
And I expect more from this group of people. Now, the things that I had issues with, they did that thing again where it's just kind of the ending is this big Deus Ex Machina with the power of love or something.
Tears.
I'm
it was
kind
the power
of starting
of tears.
To feel that becoming a theme. Yeah, that's becoming a theme. And I don't necessarily love that as much as I could, but I love the interplay between the two characters when they're on the roof and they're panicking and they're screaming. Mm-hmm. And he just stops and he looks at her and says, "You tell me." He's standing there in grave danger, about to be murdered, but he still wants to test this girl to see if she's really going to be able to restore his faith, you know, and be somebody who's clever enough to be a companion.
What did you think?
And she figures it all out.
What did you guys think of the one word test? My wife was watching it and she's like, oh, that's kind of interesting. And of course she had missed like the first 15 minutes in reference to the actual pond, where the, governess had died. But, mm-hmm. What did you think of that test? Was that a good exchange? I thought that was what is her name? The lizard woman.
Vastra.
I really like her character.
Mm-hmm. I like throwaway line about how Sir Conan Doyle is clearly basing his great detective on you.
Yes. And then Sherlock Holmes shows up later.
That was cute.
Rodrigo.
I like her. I like her too. Which is why I hope that we never see her again. Because there's just this series has just had this, for me, this ability to say, hey, look at this awesome thing. Now look at it again. Now look at it again from underneath. Now look at it again from this angle. Mm-hmm. And it turns into a rock. You know, it's like it's just not that interesting anymore once you analyze it five ways from Sunday.
If you look at it from this way and look at it from this way and look at it from this way and you don't blink, it's a rock.
And then eventually you get into that golden spiral and you learn the 216 letter name of God.
Finally, New TARDIS.
Not finally.
What?
The 11th Doctor grew a new TARDIS at the beginning of his regime.
Right. But we've got a new inside TARDIS.
I think what he meant was discussion wise. Finally, new TARDIS.
Oh, okay.
Yes, on this point, new TARDIS.
Right, but I do have one other thing that I want to talk about, and it goes kind of along those lines. But I do really like the new TARDIS. I like that it's finally out of the, this was made out of potholders and
that kettles. Zoe Deschanel built it in her spare time kind of attitude. Right.
I'm glad that we've it was fine when it was that. I don't have a problem with it, but I'm glad that we've moved past it.
Yep, it's a proper spaceship now.
Cuz you know what? I had watched a lot of the a lot of the series before I finally saw the scarf, hat, Fourth Doctor, before I saw his TARDIS, and I was like, that's awesome. It's an iTARDIS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
30 years
like, I want the TARDIS to, like, when I realized that they had done that, that it was such a drastic change from what it had been, I was like, I want to see what else they can do with it. And when we got Matt Smith and the TARDIS changed, and it wasn't that different, I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it matched his personality, you know, as that kind of raggedy doctor thing that they started out with. Yeah. But I'm glad that they've changed it.
Bigger
the
on the
interior now.
Go ahead, Matthew.
The interior now is finally, again, reminiscent of what we saw before in the old series, which... don't get me wrong. I love the new series, and I think the new series as a standalone 7-season thing is fascinating. But they've got 30 years that they can draw on and pull, and making it look more like a classical TARDIS, you know, to me feels like it's something where we can tie into those stories for the people that want that and to some degree need that. But then it's also a really keen design for the people who've never seen anything before David Tennant, you know?
Yeah. So real quick, Matthew, when Rodrigo mentioned it's an iPod TARDIS or whatever you were saying, Rodrigo, the Apple design. Apple actually, all their product line is actually lifted from a design style from the 1950s. So
yeah, it's that.
Yeah.
I don't remember what it's not Art Deco, but it's something like that.
No.
Nouveau.
Bigger on the inside or smaller on the outside?
Well, that's the inversion, right? That's what makes this character special, that she says what everybody says, but she says it differently, which, by the way, is kind of what made me not hate Rory from the beginning, because I think it was him.
Yeah.
Where, you know, he comes in and he says, oh, it's like a Tesseract or something like that. right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, most people just say it's bigger on the inside.
Right.
You know, that's that moment where you see what the character is about, how they're reacting.
Right, right.
That's one of the moments where the series hit a flat note for me this episode.
Really?
Because there is, anytime you introduce a new companion who's super wonderful, you run the risk of Mary suing her.
Yeah.
And I feel like they've handled her two appearances very well. But one of the moments in Asylum of the Daleks, kind of Mary sued and bumped into that wall. And when she said it's smaller on the outside, that's a point where I just kind of went, ooh, don't, no, let's back away from that, because that makes her not just clever, but almost too self-aware of how
right, how previous how, companions mm-hmm. have been.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, well, it's almost the hipster mentality of mm-hmm. I'm going to do it the opposite way. I ate my pizza before it was cool and burned the hell out of my mouth. But that's overall, I feel like the episode really worked on its own merits, but also worked on the merits of the story, the bits of the story that you could link to other things.
Okay, yeah.
And I think probably the keenest moment for me out of her was, do your secret voice.
Yeah.
And then she spoke with her regular accent for a second.
Right, right.
That was perfect. I love that. Hello.
Doctor.
But there's definitely some difference to be mined out of this character.
Doctor Who?
Yeah, that's getting on my last nerve.
Rodrigo? Yeah.
Well, it's going to keep going because, you know, that's the question that on the fields of Whatchamajigget is going to get asked again.
Yeah, that's the bad wolf. I know the silence will fall and the question and
will be answered.
I understand that the question.
Don't you know that that's going to be the last episode?
Yeah, sure.
It's not going to be the last
episode. Well, it's going to be the last
episode of this showrunner.
Right.
Right. Right.
When they hand it off to the guy who wrote Life from Mars or something. But I understand why you got to do it, but there was an episode where Bad Wolf was a kid riding on the side of the TARDIS, and that's the only reference we got to it. Mm-hmm. And nobody said anything, and they didn't lampshade it, and you didn't plot point.
But you know what? That was the previous showrunner. Moffat really, really likes his arc words. I mean, I wrote a review for Major Spoilers of the complete season 6, was it, DVD?
Yes.
Yeah.
Collection. And that was one thing that just drove me nuts, because it's like that sing-songy thing that the marionette monsters do, mm-hmm. that becomes important. You know, devils run when a good man goes to war. That's important. You know, the question that must never be asked. That's important. Mm-hmm. River songs hold, you know, the only water in the forest is a river. That's important. There are so many little phrases that are important that almost none of them are important, because they're all going to get worked out and you're going to find out what everything is.
Well, and that's why the,
I can see that.
You know, the clever boy line is probably the most important line from this. There may have been others, but I got to tell you, there were so many laughing bits. The doctor scolding, what's his face all the time.
Strax.
You've got the short legs.
Strax.
It was just that interaction between the two, straight man, comedic Strax. Man. Wonderful.
Yeah. And when Strax actually got in the joke.
Yes.
When they were standing by, I don't even know what the joke was.
You're Sherlock Holmes.
Pond and Strax got the joke.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that. But, you know, that's something, again, where you have that tie to the old series with the Sontaran. You have that mm-hmm. tie of all of this is coming together. But I liked him as much as I've liked any companion in the new series.
Would you want to see Strax be a companion?
Oh, hell yes. I think they could ruin him really easily, but there's almost no chance of Strax getting wrapped up in some sort of romantic entanglement. And that's my worry with Clara, because we've been replaying Echo.
Oh, no. They absolutely are. I mean, that's where this is going. Like,
yeah.
The biggest surprise out of the previous arc was that got killed relatively quickly.
Well, they
turned not that quickly.
Into a love triangle,
right?
And then she had to choose. It was still a romantic subplot,
right? Right.
You know, it was still, do I choose Rory, whom I love for this reason, or the Doctor, whom I'm enamored with for this reason? You know, I don't know. You tell
Zach,
me.
Are you wanting to go see this episode now, Zach? Now that we've spoiled everything for you.
Well, no, that's fine, because generally when we talk about who, it ended up spoiling anyways, but it's fine. I feel like if I want to watch it, I don't care if you're going to spoil it, because I'll get so much into it, I'll forget probably what you say anyways.
Yeah, well, like you always do, as reflected by your midterm grades.
Don't be that guy. People who's like, I like watching who? No. These are the people who tattoo mustaches on their fingers. Do not.
What? That's not cool.
I will. Rodrigo, what were you going to dodge and I will drive.
You wanted to say something either about the TARDIS or the Clarabit or something?
Right. About. So I don't know if because I this the last episode I saw was the one in with the Angels in Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that was the last
that was the last one before this one.
Okay. So this episode also features a new open.
Yes.
Yes.
If one of the things that you may have noticed,
I love that new open.
Yeah, one of the things you may have noticed. Yes, the face is in there.
That's what I love.
That's classic Doctor Who.
That face is back. Yeah, mm-hmm. No, absolutely.
If you watch
again, you know, I started watching the new series, then going back to the other ones, it's like his face is in every one of them, at least that I saw.
Right.
Yep.
And then the ninth and tenth Doctors didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wouldn't it be cool if they figured out a way to do this and still keep it modern and not make it look hokey? And I feel that they did.
Did you notice leading up to this, what is essentially the brand new open, the opening sequences on the first half of the season, every open got darker and darker and darker and darker until you got up to this, you got up to the one before this, and it was so dark you could barely see what the TARDIS spinning around in the tunnel. And then you come to this one, and it's all light and bright and different, and there's a face. And, you know, this is a the mid-break, or I don't know how they term it. I think iTunes actually sells this as a second season or a separate season.
Yeah, they generally do that.
And I hate that. But, you know, we've come to this point in Doctor Who where his life has become so dark and tragic and awful that now we come up with something that's bright and shiny. Maybe this is a turnaround for the types of stories to where it's always not going to be brooding and whatnot going forward. I mean, he's got a mission now, and he's excited about this mission.
I think it goes in cycles.
Yeah, absolutely.
The Ninth Doctor was very dark, and he arced up and out of that. And about the time that he really finished his I'm not dark and broody anymore, they killed him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sort of killed him. And then turned him into the Tenth Doctor, who kind of jumped that line back and forth between I'm whimsical and awesome and also I will chop you in half and kick you off an airship.
Yep.
So, I mean, it definitely goes in cycles. And 11 has had a weird kind of arc in that he was always previously, especially at the beginning, I felt like because he had partly a child companion at the beginning and imprinted mm-hmm. on her a little bit, he was very childish and very kind of flippy dippy and capricious, and
right,
you know, the TARDIS that Rodrigo was talking about was part of that. And now it feels like, first of all, he's now saying that he's over 1,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They have built time into this incarnation to allow for stories to be told, or just to, you know, point out the fact that the Doctor has now died 3 times in 7 years.
Yeah, a lot. That's important. Because, yeah, they went through 3 incarnations in a few years.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And right? The Ninth Doctor canonically, by things said in the episodes, lived for a year.
Mm-hmm.
His initial incarnation, he died when he was 450 and regenerated. And then somewhere along the line about the Ninth Doctor, we're at a point where they've locked him in time to where one season of his life, 1 year of his life, is 1 year of his life. And I like the fact that this Doctor now has stuff that could have happened where we could back and go, oh, this stuff happened.
They make reference to that in the astronaut episode where the Pons and mm-hmm. the Doctor have been separated from mm-hmm. one another. And he shows up and he's like, oh, well, I've been doing all this and this and this and this and this. And you're like, oh, he's been having like maybe 1,000 years, you know, 400 years of adventures without them being around.
He explicitly states in that episode, he's like, well, I'm 1,104 now.
Yeah.
And that's the point where I sat up straight during that episode and went, oh, yay. And I cheered until commercial.
Which is tough because it's BBC and they don't have commercials.
They have commercials on the BBC.
BBCA,
well, BBC
do.
America, they do.
Yeah.
And they're like, they're all commercials for toys that I can't buy.
Oh, yeah. The Doctor Who commercial, toy commercials are great. The best part about it, the ones that aired on this one, is that, you know, so the commercial comes on, is like, it's Doctor Who with his new companion, Amy Pond.
She's the old companion now, stupid commercial.
Bottom line on this episode, Rodrigo.
It was the right kind of thing. Like, it was fun and it was interesting and it got me interested in the new companion. Mm-hmm. Simultaneously, it is just so frightening because there were so many things that I have liked about this series. And every time they show up again, I get freaked out. And the Santaran is back and the Lizard Lady is back. And I like both of those guys. And if we keep seeing them, they're going to mess them up. So I'm worried about that. But I have to approach my Doctor Who cautiously. That's the Doctor, the kind of Doctor Who fan that I've become.
Matthew.
Well, I'm old.
What?
And, you know, I've been watching Doctor Who off and on since the late 70s. Really enjoyed it in the 80s. And this episode is good for a lot of reasons, in that it takes what I really love about the new series, and it takes what I really love about the old series, and it puts it all together with a Doctor who's referencing the old Doctors. And in the new series, we have had Rose, who was too little and too blonde, and Donna, who was too loud, and, you know, I kind of liked Martha, but Martha kind of felt like a reflexive, this is as far away from Rose as we could get.
Sure.
And I liked Amy in kind of an eye candy sort of way, but we finally once again have a companion that I just want to do.
Wait, you said that about Amy.
Like, I like my coffee. I do, but I think this is much, much more attractive even than Amy. And moreover, she has a real chemistry with the actor who plays the Doctor. She plays off him really well. And they do that hyperbabbly thing. And the moment where they're running up the staircase and she's like, how'd we get so high? It's bigger. It's taller on the inside. That right there cements for me, this is a relationship that could be fun to watch. So I'm on board for this. Plus the hat was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So.
I love that hat. I really enjoyed this episode top to bottom. If you get a chance, if you haven't seen it, sit down and watch it. It's wonderful. But also, as Rodrigo said, there may be some things that may make you want to hesitate and hope that they don't run it into the ground.
It'll drive you nuts.
Yes, they will. All right.
Well, and the best part, though, Vastra and Strax both are old school aliens.
Yeah, yeah.
She's a Silurian and he's a Santaran. They're both from the 1970s.
Look what I have found.
A piece of paper.
I have found a partial movie watch list. This isn't the whole 100. This isn't the 100 list. This is a refined one. Because Matthew had mentioned the breakfast film, and it's not on this list, but I know it was on the list before. So we got the breakfast film.
What do you call it? That breakfast film. I have the one. He says, you mess with the bull and you get in trouble.
Yes. So
that's right. It had Emilio Sheen in it, and he was playing Billy the Kid.
All right.
And Billy the Kid was so in some here sort are, of Western jail.
Here are three possible movies that we could assign to Zach for next time. The first one, what year did this come out? 1930-something.
Oh. What is it?
1933, The Marx Brothers Duck Soup.
What?
That's from earlier than 33.
Nope, that's what the release date is, 33.
Not much earlier.
Okay. I thought it was from 20.
So that is option one. Option two, Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Option
77.
Three. Option three. Ooh, there's so many good ones on here. Snatch.
Am I supposed to choose? Are you the
no? I'm going to let Matthew choose.
Yeah.
Duck Soup, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, or Snatch.
Well, let's see, Zach. You can have this lovely chocolate fromage, or lobster thermidor, or a can of spam.
What? Duck soup isn't a can of spam, I will tell you that.
No, I'm talking about Snatch.
Oh, Snatch is really good.
Is Snatch? Is Snatch the one? No, that's Lockstock. How I even
They're
seen
both
Snatch?
The same. That's the problem.
It's a McG of the film, two,
but no, it's not McG. It is Madonna's ex-husband.
Madonna's boyfriend.
Soderbergh?
No, yeah.
Not Soderbergh.
Oh, Guy Ritchie.
Guy Ritchie.
Is better. I think Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Okay. I think as a for the largest difference, I think Close Encounters would be optimal. Well, I guess technically it's still sci-fi, but Close Encounters has a much longer kind of lyrical type of storytelling.
It'll complement Kai without necessarily treading the same territory.
Right, but we're just wanting Zach to watch good movies.
But as we learned with the last trade we reviewed, sometimes the order that you present a story can definitely influence things.
And also, you need to watch this and watch Bob Balaban, because Bob Balaban is hysterical.
So they
took Bob Balaban out of it because all of his stories were like really long and kind of didn't have to do with the plot of The Lord of the Rings.
There's two versions.
Yay, Rodrigo!
Do you get that,
back.
Rodrigo?
Yeah, I'm back from vacation.
Okay. So we can either have Zach watch the director's cut, or we could have him watch the... There's so many different cuts of this movie. This is the 1977 theatrical release. Again, it depends.
Haven't watched the long one. The special 214
edition. The director's cut is only 3 minutes longer. This one does not include... This should be part of the discussion next week, Zach, as you review Close Encounters of the Third Kind. You really need to look at various releases of movies, because depending on which version of the movie you have seen, you are getting material that you are not seeing in the others. For example, in the television version of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, they inserted like 5 minutes of press conference stuff that is not in anything else. And in director's cut, they've got it's got an extended sequence at the end where Neri goes inside the ship. And you see everything.
That's the one he needs to see.
I think that's the director's cut then. So director's cut, Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Spoiler the whole film for him right now.
Oh, look, I'll check it down.
It's about aliens and spacemen's and Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
And, interesting. And French, the kind of self-French title. Avant-garde directors.
Yes.
Who for some reason are in the film.
Richard Dreyfuss, Francis Truffaut, Terry Garr. Terry Garr. Directed by Steven Spielberg. So, have you seen this movie before?
Nope.
Never. God dang, Zach. Have you seen any of the three movies that I talked about today?
No.
Snatch, Duck Soup, or Close Encounters of the Third Kind?
No.
Damn it, Zach.
That's why. Dude, I mean, if I had seen movies, we couldn't be doing this. Yeah, I'm like 20.
So, gosh dang, we got another show have to record. But there is a topic. Listen, here is a. Well, The Big Lebowski wasn't out when we were 20.
That's not the point. I remember when
you were
20.
Let me ask you this.
We're watching VHS copies of The Flash.
We are so out of time. We have another podcast that we have to record. But let me ask you this, because I wonder if Matthew and I, and maybe to an extent Rodrigo, we get pop culture references to Planet of the Apes and The Three Stooges and Abbott and Costello and all of this stuff. Did cable television screw that over for us, for everybody? Did it screw young Zach over? Did the internet screw young Zach over? Because when Matthew and I were growing up, we had like four, maybe five channels that we could watch. And in order to maximize the time, they would run Three Stooges and Little Rascals and Old Mickey Mouse Club from the 1950s. And so we know who Annette Funicello is. We know Mickey. We know all the Timmy and the kids that appeared on that show. But today, you've got so many more options to go and look for. You got 500 other channels you can go and watch. Mm-hmm. In our day, it was you either watch The Ropers or you watch Planet of the Apes. on Channel 41. Is that, has that happened? Matthew, do you think? Or Rodrigo?
Personally, I think it absolutely has happened, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. With the same breath that you say, well, now we don't have that collective, you know,
right,
idea. Now, right, not everybody's watching American Bandstand. I forget how old you guys are.
American Bandstand ran through the 80s. So, and don't forget Soul Train.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, not everybody's watching Soul Train. Not everybody's watching I Love
That.
Not everybody's watching, you know, whatever. So you have that, yes, that to a certain degree, that's not there anymore, and that's a little sad. But, I mean, come on, guys. How many shows did you watch growing up that were just boring-ass?
Oh,
boring,
I'm not saying that there were crap.
Hilarious.
I can't tell you how many times that there was something that was crap.
Say what?
No, there was a lot of crap that it was like you either watch this and every 5 minutes they cut in with an aluminum.
What I'm saying is,
yeah, go ahead.
You couldn't turn away from the crap because there was nothing else.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nowadays, you have the opportunity to go find something else, something that you will actually enjoy. So, yes, to a certain degree, the explosion of the internet and a bazillion cable channels and Netflix and Hulu and all those on-demand providers, yes, that has completely changed that. But it is an even trade. In the end, it is we're not all going to get the same jokes, mm-hmm, but also you're not going to spend as much of your life being horrendously bored.
Well, that's true too.
You want to watch?
Yeah, that's true too. But I mean,
to watch,
you know, Saturday morning at 11 o'clock when the cartoons ended, Saturday Sci-Fi on what is it, Channel 5 or Channel 41, and so you got to see The Day the Earth Stood Still. You got to see The Invasion of the Body Snatchers. You got to see.
But you also got to see A Crack in the World, and to see awful film.
Those were days that crap, those were the days I turned off the TV and went and mowed the lawn or something.
I think you and I both are falling into that trap of it's not like I remember it, so it
no,
must
it's
be
not.
Bad.
No. Yeah. It's not that. It's just that I think that there's the diversity, and I'm not saying diversity is bad, mm-hmm, but when I look at someone and I say, you know, Moe, Larry, and Curly, and they look at you like, what the F are you talking about? I still think Three Stooges have some relevance in, I still think that they have some relevance in this grand scheme of things. I mean, that certainly they tried a movie and it failed. But when I look at Zach and I say, I look at Zach and I say, The Big Lebowski, Zach, have you seen it?
No, but I know what it is.
That's the thing. If I reference the dude, Zach may know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
You know, it's the dude or duder or El Duderino, if you're not in the brevity thing.
Yeah.
You know, when you say that, Zach can get that reference. And now in the new world, Zach can get that reference without ever having seen that reference. That is the existence of, we were talking about it in the last episode we recorded, which was actually 19 episodes ago. It's the robot chicken theory.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the robot chicken theory of Transformers, G.I. Joe, those shows existed.
Right.
But you didn't necessarily watch them, but you know, when I say, Zach, when I say, and now I know, you know what comes next. Right.
He probably has. Yes, there you go. He did it.
I hate you. Okay, so knowing is half the battle, Zachary, and the other half is split equally between the blue and red lasers.
I mean, the other thing is, you will find people who are Stephen and Matthew's age who don't.
What? You will?
No.
That's what they floated those people out on icebergs and they were never heard from again.
Part of the thing is, you know, not everybody is a TV or a movie person.
Well,
not everybody cared as much about that. You know, for example, when I was growing up, there was one channel to watch Saturday morning cartoons on, right? It was Fox Kids. Nothing else was quite as good until the WB really got started,
mm-hmm,
and going. But my mom didn't let us watch cartoons that much. I mean, basically, as soon as breakfast was on the table, that's when cartoons ended. And that was pretty early.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of those cartoons. You know, I've watched episodes of The Tick. I've watched episodes of the old X-Men, but I haven't watched every episode of the 90s X-Men because my mom didn't want us watching TV all Saturday morning. You know, the way that my family did things influenced my pop culture absorption.
And that's important. I mean, my grandmother used to lament that we would watch TV on Saturday nights instead of sitting together in the parlor talking and singing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the nights that we did that, I loved it. I still fondly remember sitting in the parlor talking and singing with my grandmother and my aunts and uncles and her friends. And it didn't necessarily happen enough. Now that I'm 40, I'm like, yeah, that was pretty awesome. But when you're 6 and 8, you're like, come on, the Dukes of Hazzard is on.
Dukes of Hazzard!
Dukes of Hazzard!
Oh my God, if I don't see somebody slide across the hood of a car, I'm going to die.
Oh God, Fatima!
All right, everybody, we have started the conversation. We have started the conversation.
You should totally finish it.
And we want our listeners to finish it by heading over to majorspoilers.com. Use the comment section, share your thoughts, your ideas, feedback about this episode. And certainly, if you want to help the cause, consider making a one-time or a $2, $5, $10 a month recurring donation. Check out our friends at tweakedaudio.com. Remember, use the checkout code MAJOR when you check out to get 1/3 off your price. And don't forget, if you're buying something from Amazon, use that Amazon link at majorspoilers.com. Share a little love and send a little back our way. That wraps it up for this issue of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Next time, Judge Dredd. Why? Because we know that you love comics, and we do too, and we will talk with you soon.
If I had the X-ray vision of a Superman, I could save some bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the rack. And although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, he'd make me wait out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Away. If I was hulking green or gray, I could bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little me would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would you bag and board your comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler, yeah, 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 yeah. What a major spoiler.
Major Spoilers is copyright 2013.